gathered here today to pay a final tribute to the life of David Israel, Yamante, Roger Cuvier, and Phil. Our hearts go out to David's beloved family and children, Maury, Ken, and Jane, Samuel, Aaron, the grandchildren, Nathan, and Sam, the sister, Beverly, and her brother, Scott, the brother-in-law, Richard, the nieces and nephews and cousins and our many, many friends in the community. One of the distinctive features about Judaism is the centrality of stories in our tradition. Every great religion tells stories, but it seems to me that stories have a unique place in the Jewish tradition. The holiest book, the Tanakh, contains many things. It contains law, it contains prophecy, it contains poetry, contains wisdom, more than anything else. The Tanakh, the Bible, is a story. It's a story about how the world came to be. It's a story about how our people came to be. And this big story contains within it many smaller stories. Stories of everyday people and their hopes and their dreams, and their frustrations and their triumphs and challenges. It's why our story is so important to us as a source of wisdom and inspiration. It's because a good story pulls together many disparate elements of our world and makes sense out of them. A good story connects things that we may not have thought to connect. It connects the dots of our world, it connects the dots of our lives, and ultimately stories help us to feel more connected with each other. Daisy loved stories. She majored in American literature at the University of Washington. Throughout her life, she read voraciously, and she was a member of countless book clubs. One of her favorite authors was Charles Dickens, and Dickens wrote sagas. His novels wove together different generations, different time periods, people of different walks of life, people of different social classes. And in a Dickens novel, all these radically different characters were all part of one worldwide web. They were all connected to each other. Even when, at first, it didn't appear to be, it didn't seem to be. Daisy was by nature a connector. She was a warm, friendly, vibrant person. Every time I saw her, even very recently, she had a huge smile on her face. Her smile was inviting. It welcomed you in. It made you feel connected. And I experienced that myself. The first time I came to this community 14 years ago, I was on the receiving end of Daisy's warmth. And I know how good it can feel to be greeted by Daisy. And I was greeted that way every time I saw her for the past 14 years. It felt great. One of the hardest things any person ever has to experience in life is to feel you're on the outside looking in. When Daisy greeted us, we always felt we were on the inside. We were part of the community, we were part of the family. And I can only begin to imagine how many people felt that way. Look at all the people here. How many people felt more connected, more accepted, more welcomed into the circle because of Daisy's generous way of looking at us and greeting us. Daisy understood intuitively how important it is for each human being to feel connected, to feel a part of something larger than ourselves. And she also understood that the greater the reach, the better the story. The further apart are the pieces we connect at the beginning, the more interesting the story that connects them, and the more satisfying. It's very easy to be connected to a person who is exactly like you. It's a greater achievement to connect people who, for any number of reasons, might be at a distance from each other. It could be age, it could be time, it could be geography, it could be social class, it could be interest level, it could be personality. It's one level to be connected to your own immediate family. It's another level to feel a closeness to a wide-ranging extended family. Daisy was a person who was always extending the meaning of family love. She was the binding force that kept her extended family together. She was the link across the generations, between children, the grandparents, the cousins, and the in-laws. Here's a story about Daisy that I think says a lot about her character. Daisy and Mike traveled a lot on vacation with their mother Hannah, David and Beth, on their own, without the presence of their children or their grandchildren. I don't know how many people did that. That's pretty amazing. That's raising family connection to a whole new level. That's how Daisy was. At the center of her world was a very powerful love. Beautiful marriage she had with Mike for 60 years. He was her soulmate and her best friend. And their love for each other was like the central headquarters of her life. That was the nerve center of her life. From that center, the love spread out. Daisy was always looking for ways to deepen her connections to other people and to help us feel more connected to one another. She grew up, as we all know, in a very tight-knit Sephardic community in which everybody in the neighborhood knew everybody else. Over the years, Daisy loved going back to that neighborhood in the Central District. It was like a power source that recharged her and reminded her of her deepest values. It was a place and a time where everybody knew, not only did they know you, but they knew where you came from. They knew where your parents were, they knew where your grandparents were, where your aunts and uncles were, where your cousins were, where your siblings were. The cousins were not just relations. They were your friends. They were cousin friends. And it's that spirit that Daisy was constantly spreading in the world. She was always collecting new people, bringing them into that circle. It was true of her children's friends. It was true of the people in Mike's business. But Israel felt such a deep connection to Daisy and to each other because of her influence. You all gathered around her recently like she was a queen holding court. It was true of Mike's caregivers who became part of the family. It was true of Daisy's lady massage therapist who became a friend that Daisy used to go out to coffee with every day. It was true of Benoit, the caterer, who came to visit her recently when he heard that she had back problems. Even the painter who was painting the outside of the house was soon coming inside the house for tuna fish, tuna fish sandwiches and his shoes every day. That's because Daisy was a champion relator. Daisy could even form a connection with people without even speaking to them. She, on a trip to India 11 years ago, she came into contact with members of a family who could not speak English. Somehow Daisy still managed to connect with them. Something about her smile, her body language, the gesture she was using, she managed to make these people feel as if she was a friend and they were her friends. That's how she was. Daisy just excelled at human relationships. She understood how they worked. She understood what made them work. She was as gracious at accepting invitations as she was in extending invitations. Daisy had a saying in recent years, "Someone invites me, I say yes." And Daisy understood, if we want to be close to other people, we have to give a little. We have to be willing to walk in another person's direction. We have to show interest in them and what they're interested in. Daisy always did that with so much graciousness. She became interested in sports because it was Mike's interest. She developed a shared passion in the NCAA tournament, and they would always watch the Final Four together. When the Seahawks started playing well, and the community got excited about that, Daisy would say, "I'm learning football." She always expanded herself. She was always open to learning something new as a way of connecting with others. And Daisy surrounded herself with all those connections. The way we choose to decorate our home says a lot about our identity. After all, our home is our own space. We do with it whatever we want. Daisy chose to be surrounded with memories of people who she felt connected to. She wasn't a person who spent a lot of money on jewelry or expensive clothes. Possessions to Daisy were only important if they reminded her of somebody that she loved. So everything in Daisy's house had a story behind it, connecting her to the person who gave it to her. It could be a friend went to Hong Kong and brought back a little gift. That gift reminded Daisy of their friendship. It could be a holiday card. She saved every single one of them. For Daisy, there was no greater gift than affection. And she she bestowed freely on other people. We are the receiving end of Daisy's affection as a great gift. That's what made her such a great mother, grandmother, sister, and friend. And it's what made Daisy such a treasured member of our community. She understood that you could be standing right next to a person and feel at a distance, or you could be geographically very far away and feel close. It all depends on your attitude. She grew up in a home where the sights and the smells of roads were hideous, even though physically they were thousands of miles away. Daisy treasured her Sephardic heritage, and she treasured her American heritage. She had a beautiful way of connecting them together. She grew up in an intimate Jewish community that was also experiencing, in her day, a level of opportunity that had never been possible for the Jewish people before. Never, ever, in any society. And she loved that about America. And she loved extending her horizons, going to university, which is not true for the previous generation, never had that opportunity. Certainly not a woman. She loved feeling connected to a whole new world that had excluded our people for so long, and that was open to us. And she looked forward to the opportunity to connect the two worlds that she grew up in together. She didn't think you had to choose. Good storytelling connects up all the pieces and all the characters. Daisy was a master storyteller in the greatest sense of that term. She could take an apartment building full of strangers and make them feel as if they were all part of one school, make them feel as if they were all part of one community. When she volunteered at the council house, she created a whole range of activities, from music clubs to book clubs, and what they all had in common was that they generated connection. What they all had in common was that they facilitated people engaging with each other, talking to each other, being with each other, being interacting with each other. Changed the whole atmosphere of this apartment building. The community was born because of Daisy Kent. I always felt that way when Daisy was in our community. There are certain people that we all depend on. We probably don't even realize that we depend on them. They do it so naturally. They do it so gracefully, as Daisy said. There are certain people like Daisy we depend on to model community for us. To model the caring and the giving and the loving of people and the loving of our people and our heritage that nourish the core of the Jewish community. Daisy was one of those very core people. Without fanfare, without calling attention to herself, who just generated among us a love of community. Every time she was present in the room, Daisy showed us how to do it. Her presence, her warmth, a natural love of people, a natural love of the Jewish people, a natural love of all people, led us to interact with each other more, engage with each other more, just as she had that same impact on the council house and, of course, on the family and friends. We're all going to miss her very much. Ken and Maureen, Jane, Beverly, and Hitchcock, and all the family, may you find comfort and strength in the memory of your mother's love, your sister's love, and her shining example of goodness, caring, and kindness. The Hikmet Mishmatat throughout the Torah community, and the memory of Daisy Israel being an eternal blessing for her soul rest in peace. Let us say amen. We are saying our tradition to the Rima Yotim and Halev, Rima Sim and Halev, words which come from the heart, enter the heart, and that spirit that might recall first Jane, then Beverly, and then Yitzchak to share words of affection and freedom.
Unfortunately for her, her parents did not share that, and he felt that young girls should take care of it. So, Lucky for my mom, there is one room closed, another one open. She met my dad at the age of 17 in college with his family for the time being. My dad was the love of her life, and we spent almost 60 years together, but stayed shy of it. They were completely devoted to each other and their kids in the truest sense of the word. When I was young, after more than 10 years old, my mom decided she wanted to pursue her education. She started at Belvoir Community College, quickly transferred to UW, and newly just graduated Phi Beta Kappa, summa cum laude, and a member of Board of Boards. She wasn't just there to get her degree, she was there to do it well. She majored in English literature, and I remember always falling asleep listening to her typewriter in the business store while she wrote her papers. When Jane Eyre and Charlotte Bronte, I would read Judy's Woman with her dress still. She would come in and try to read them to me, mostly Jane Eyre, to get me more interested. She went on to become a hugely overeducated volunteer and spearheaded all the programming at Temple House, where she was involved with MPJW. What she did there as a volunteer later turned into a full-time position, and the program she created still exists today. She was a consummate caregiver. She cared selflessly for her mother, father, my Uncle Isaac, and of course my dad. She only saw herself as a caregiver. She never wanted to be a recipient. She perpetually saw herself as young, and maybe that was the key to her staying young as long as she did. Even in her 80s and these last years, I tried to talk to her about this very subject of moving somewhere. She would look at me and say, "Why would I go there? That's for old people." Because in her mind and in her heart, she didn't see herself that way. She wanted to be independent in her home she loved and doing the things she loved with the people she loved. Her last day before her injury was a perfect example of how she wanted to live. It was lunch with her best buddy cousin Beth Alvarez, a trip to Costco, and other errands. But two things I want you to know about her day on Friday. The first is about her lunches with friends, whether it was Beth, or her buddy Rita at the coupe, or her birthday gift lunch, or coffee with my father-in-law at McDonald's. I'd ask her that night, "Oh, what did you have? What did you eat?" She would say, "Oh, I had a salad, it was fine, and we had ginger for coffee." Because that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to linger with you and talk to you once again. I get it now, and I see what she did, and how she connected and lingered with so many that she loved. It could be a lifelong cousin, any of my friends, who she thought were her friends, a beloved massage therapist, Annalise, and my dad's special caregiver, Morella. These are just some of the people who joined me to hang around with her in her circle. In the last couple of years, as her arthritis got worse, if I ever went on vacation, some of my friends went on baby watch. But I don't think it was a huge burden. Stacy would call, Julie or Sue would take her to her favorite Japanese restaurant, or sometimes a movie. But I know now they didn't do it as a favor to me. They just wanted to spend time with her. Rabbi talked about Spring Israel, and I want to tell you that last month, my mom and I attended the annual Spring Israel Child Holiday Party. I'm pretty sure I was invited to be a driver, but the truth is, I didn't mind. I'm not sure if any of you have seen an 85-year-old prom queen, but that's what it was like to watch. The employees and partners treated her with so much gratitude, generosity, and respect. She was so touched. But beyond that, she was so proud. The whole way home, she kept saying, "You see how many people Mike has helped employ and given a livelihood to." But I know that it wasn't just his accomplishment. It was hers also, because she too was his partner in everything. She didn't have an office there. Her name wasn't on the door. But her endless support, input, and steadfast encouragement to my dad made her achiever and legacy just as amazing. One of her most significant connections was also with a young girl in Angel of Alaska that she never met. Her name is Jada, and her family is good friends with her nephew, Andrew. Upon hearing about Jada and her high intelligence, but the likelihood of not a great path because of poor educational opportunities, lack of support, my mom took it upon herself to be like a nanny to Jada. She had a continual pile on her hall bench and stated that she picked up when she saw it. Mostly books, toys, clothing, dolls, anything in the room. And every few weeks she mailed them off to her. And Jada wrote her letters and drew her pictures and the girls who wanted their attention. The second thing about her life since living where she loved to live was her aunts. But my mom, they went to parents to check out the list like we all do. They were acting busy. Last week when we were out, we had some baking to do. And that, of course, wanted to swing through the drive-through and the cat. But she would have nothing of it. I had to go in. We had to go in, talk to the teller, visit with the banker. And I don't think also that she really trusted that the drive-through would give her depositing. Just so you know, when you do your banking, the drive-through is my mom had a saying she would always say to me, occasionally, I would roll my eyes at her. But I know what she meant, and I know she lived by it. She would say to me, you only get one chance to get things right. I'm not sure if that's really true. I think we can always try to do better. But for her, that was her credo and her motto. And she loved her kids in that fashion. Things weren't always easy, but she always strove to love us individually and with a different relationship with each of us. Many people will love you when you're lost, but nobody loves you like your mother. And we will live in our own way, more now than Amy and I all know that. My boys feel right as they like to. And seeing them grow up as far as she did, gave her immense pleasure and joy. When Nathan was little and my grandma lived with us, he called my mom baby and my grandma was the old baby. My grandmother thought of the grandma, and Daisy was a name for grandma. And nothing made her more happy or proud than being involved in what they were doing and knowing that they were open. They both know and always will know how she felt about them and for them, because she's still with them. There are two other special people among so many others in her mom, but two I want to mention. My cousin Ezekiel, for whom my mom wasn't just an aunt, but she was his grandma. And David, for whom my mom wasn't just an aunt, but his CIA, was very important to us. They were both deeply committed to her, and she to them. And the thing about my mom was that they knew it all the time. She was also a special aunt to all, but also to Morley, Gail, and Lori. She loved them all like her own, and treated them like her own, and helped them and cared for them through hard times. So that is where the connection is. I think the reality is that we were all important to her. And she let us know all the time with how she greeted you, how she treated you, how she cared about your life, and how she connected with you. Before I'm done, I want to thank my mom. As most of you know, my mom and me were aunts. And I'm pretty sure if we ever divorced, I think she would have taken her side. But I could not have gone through this last week without her. My rock, my touchstone, and my best friend. And secondly, the hardest thing for me, I think, ever was. He came with that reservation and was with me every day, getting me up and helping. I talked about my grades with my mom's great love of literature, and even though I didn't really sit with me and read it with her, I wanted to read a poem that was going to be with her and the notion of life. She liked to close with me, but I think this might be behind. I carry your heart with me. I carry it in my heart. I am never without it. Anywhere I go, you go, my dear. And whenever it's done, my only need, you give me a number. I fear no fate, for you are my faith in me. I want no love, so beautiful you are my world, my truth. And if you, or whatever a moon has always meant, or whatever a sun will always send it to you. And here is the deepest secret that nobody knows. Here is the root of the root, and the bud of the bud, and the sky of the sky, and what we call life, which goes higher than the golden hope or the mind of the time, and the deeper wonder is deeper than the bud of the heart. I carry your heart, I carry you in my heart.
Thank you. understand the people in that cannot hear. Can you hear me? I'm Beverly. I'm Dave's sister. I want David to know that as long as I live, she will never be forgotten. I will always remember her. We heard some memories of her, and I'm going to speak for a few I have. When I was 4 and she was 7, every Saturday we would walk hand in hand to the Edson Library. She taught me how to read, and she was a ferocious reader, as you know. And even at the age of 4, I knew that she was especially smart. After Miss Winterbottom could tell a story, we would go upstairs and we would be allowed to check out 3 books. It was different. The librarian knew that Daisy was above all, and she was allowed always to check out 5 books. Our summer's vacations, as the Isser family grew, was always cousins by the dozen. We would spend our summers in snowflakes, carrying our pots and pans and kosher foods and linens, and we were just cousins by the dozen and loving every moment. As we grew older, we would go to Seaside, and it was the first time ever that all of us wore wool bathing suits. Daisy wore a bathing suit with a label. I think it was called I can't remember because I'm so involved with these memories. It was mentioned on how smart Daisy was at the University of Washington, getting a Phi Beta Kappa key. Most of us just graduated from Garfield. I want to mention one thing about her as an academic student. She had to take one science class, and science was not her favorite subject, so she took geology. Geology was an interesting class, but there were over 300 people in the class, and she couldn't connect with the professor. When it became finals, the professor asked, because of a period of the volcano in hell, that everyone write an essay, a long essay, as if they were a scientist observing the volcano. And of course, she wrote an essay. But how was she going to guarantee that the essay would be read by the professor and not by a few fans? So the day that all the essays were accepted in, they were delivered to his office, and the following week he would announce what he thought of the essays. He arrived at the big room housing over 300 students. And he said to the class, the essays were interesting, but one stood out. I arrived at my office, and I noticed on the office there was a Folgers coffee can to greet it on second. I opened up the coffee can, and in the coffee can was a document wrapped in tape. I unraveled the tape, and there was Davy's manuscript. He read the manuscript to the class, and they all stood up and applauded her, not only for her ingenuity, but for the eloquent, non-scientific paper that she wrote. As we mentioned before, David was a love of Davy. When he was stationed in Tacoma, he met also his love life, Felicia. They wanted to get married, but they couldn't wait too long. They couldn't join the kindergarten. So Daisy accepted the fact that he was as close to her as his son, and she offered her home for him to be married. And they were married in Daisy's home. You can never forget that. Shortly after, he went to India and had 11 we treat you like family. David, as you know, was a very independent caretaker. What you didn't want to be was one to receive care. And I'm going to share with you a memory that you do not have, and you have many memories of your own. I'm going to share with you her last 5 years. Her last 5 days, excuse me, her years were 85, for the last 5 days is when I was at the hospital with her. On Friday, last Friday, she and her good friend, Beth Almeida, went to breakfast at the pancake shop, had a wonderful breakfast, and then went to where everybody else goes. They went to Costco. They did the shopping, Daisy returned back to her home and went on to her home with a stop at the post office on West Island. She mailed the gift, and as she made her exit out, she stumbled on the curb of the post office. The post office, as you know, next to the fire department. And they immediately had the fire department contacted, and they realized at that moment that her neck was broken, that it was more severe than they anticipated. So instead of sending her to the regular hospital, they sent her to Harbinger, which is a trauma center. When she arrived at the trauma center, Jane was contacted immediately, and they couldn't wait, even though it was close to midnight, but they had to do surgery on her neck. She had stopped breathing. The surgery was performed, and so they had to put in a EVP so that she would continue breathing. On Sunday, I arrived at the hospital, and Jane was there. And Daisy knew I was there. She was able to open her eyes, and a tear came from her eye. And she was able to grasp my hand. At that time, she was still hopeful. There was a wonderful group of doctors. And because it's a teaching hospital, they had rounds with an enormous staff. As they would talk about her condition, I knew, although she couldn't talk, that she couldn't see it. She was paralyzed and dizzy, but her lips were open, her waist dead. But of course, doctors always have hope. And we talked about all the things that could be done for her. How they would remove her breathing tube eventually, and have a tourniquet, and have a tube connected to her, that they would give her physical therapy so that she would be able to move her hands. She would have occupational therapy. She would have the best care possible. She, I think, knew in her mind she never wanted to be one who was not independent. She loved being independent. She loved her home. She was never bored in her home. She was never alone in her home. She was never afraid to be home alone. She loved looking at Mount Rainier. She loved looking at Lynn Washington. She loved listening to the birds. She loved life. In her mind, I think she thought it was not quality that she wanted. And as the day wore on, and Jane and I were lovingly caressing her and talking to her, she stopped responding. I think in her mind, she said, I want to go back with my took till Tuesday evening, at 6 o'clock, and she decided, I think I'm going to mind self-soothing. And I don't know that she was self-soothing. She was peaceful. She was, I think she said in her heart, she had a good life, but it was really difficult. She didn't want all this wonderful medical intervention that was available to her. We kissed her. We acknowledged that she had a good life. And we said goodbye. He will never be forgotten. He will always be in our memory.